Today is Sunday, August 20th, 2017.
Yes, it is.
And we have started over three times now. Our topic is the Civil War monuments, because that's been in the news. We had lots of topics to consider and decided to do a current event themed item again. So we can't kick this discussion off without sort of explaining for people who don't know. There seems to be a misapprehension out there that some of the Civil War monuments, or most or all, were erected immediately following the Civil War.
Yeah, no, they weren't. They were not.
And you mentioned that the losers don't generally get to erect monuments to themselves.
No, that's really not how it works normally.
Because, well, for one thing, they were economically devastated.
Yeah, there's no way they could have afforded a big public works thing.
But like also, that. It was, you know... It was just kind of culturally inconceivable at the time,
right?
For them to be celebrating their, you know,
abject loss.
I mean, I guess, you know, monument, like local monuments to the soldiers, the lives of the soldiers.
People did that. They were like more like plaques in
plaques,
the public
lists
park,
of names,
lists of names, and yeah. Things like that. That happened.
But what you see now, what the discussion is about in this sort of Civil War monument discussion, are mostly mounted men.
They're on mounts, or they're on these big pedestals, standing there looking, you know, heroic.
Yeah.
Of Confederate soldiers and Confederate leaders.
Leaders, yeah.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about the context in which these statues were erected, and where and why.
These statues were erected. In primarily two waves. The big wave was in the 1920s, during a lot of Jim Crow legislation, and basically to beat back all the gains of Reconstruction. And to beat it back, this was the propaganda wave, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The propaganda wave for white Americans to reshape their understanding of the Civil War as a lost noble cause.
Mm-hmm.
How sad, how tragic, but they were fighting for good.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And also, it was double-pronged. Also, this was, it's a real big FU to all the black people in the community who might think that, well, you know, now they're full citizens and now men can vote and now they're part of society. Actually, no, you're not.
It was, you described it actually as an act of terrorism.
Right, it's an act of state terror.
Uh-huh, against right. the black community.
Against the black community, yes. Right. And that was their function. And then again, the civil rights movement, to a lesser degree, because a lot of towns already had their statues, mm-hmm. Towns that didn't already have a statue said, hey, by the way.
During the school desegregation.
School desegregation.
Debate.
I mean, the whole wave of civil rights activity in the late 50s and 60s.
Now, somewhere along this path here, during one of these waves or other, part of the lost cause narrative, and I admit to not knowing enough about this, the iconography became, they claimed, somehow no longer about the issue of slavery, right?
Oh, yeah. Part of the lost cause narrative.
That's the lost cause narrative.
Right. Is that... Well, we weren't actually fighting about slavery. We were fighting about states' rights, and we were fighting about the right to make decisions in our own community.
States' rights, and now you see a further twist on that, which is, you know, that so something that comes up too is the Confederate flag apparently was not widely, you know, displayed.
No.
It was a historic, you know, it was only of historical interest until
right.
it was brought back by people, again, who were fighting desegregation.
Who were fighting any civil rights gains for the black community in the United States.
And
when people fought that, they brought out the Confederate flag. When people fought that, they put up Confederate statues.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Those things are intimately related.
And that's all quite recent. But one thing that blew me away is some of the statues now in various communities, have been put up as recently as the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And that I found...
Bussing!
That I found just baffling, you know, I mean, amazing, you know.
I suppose.
But you're like, it's always been like this. What are you talking about? But you know, one obvious thing is that
Bill Clinton has always been this person.
States that didn't even exist at the time of the Civil War have like Civil War monuments, right?
It's really a trip. And they have those monuments because white supremacists in the community wanted to make sure black people knew they were here. Mm-hmm. And they weren't going to let them go without a pass.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's why they exist there, right? And that's why they were being put up in the 1980s. School busing, this was a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I read a piece in the National Review that talked about, you know, what is a good conservative take on this issue?
Yeah.
And I think the idea is they're trying to set, I mean, they as they do in their editorials, they're trying to set the language.
Define the boundaries of conservatism.
Define the boundaries. And actually, I found myself kind of agreeing with their take on it. And their take on it ultimately came down to, you know what? It's a completely viable and respectable option for conservatives to actually remain silent on this issue. And and in fact, that's in many ways, I don't think they said it in these terms, but in many ways, that's a more valuable.
Possibly.
Likely, because it doesn't make you sound like A, an idiot, or B, a racist.
Right. Which may be the case, but it's hard to know, especially if you stay silent.
So there's a phrase about staying silent and being thought perhaps an idiot is better than opening your mouth and letting everyone know for sure.
Removing all doubt.
Removing all doubt.
Yep.
So,
good advice, but yes.
They pointed out that this can be, a conservative approach to this issue can be a completely valid conservative principle to apply, is leave this to local governments.
Yeah, let the local community make a decision about what they want to do with their public space.
So this is...
which I endorse wholly, by the way, because if a community decides to leave their Confederate statue standing,
yeah,
I'd like to know that about them.
So you'd like to know that they're still there.
Yeah.
So when you drive
with
through...
With the assent of the governed, I'd like to know that that's still there.
If you happen to drive through this community, you know to get the hell out before dark.
Yeah, don't even stop for gas.
Right, right. So yeah, it's funny. This is one of the cases. So these are civic projects.
Yeah,
you know, paid for presumably. Well,
many of them were funded privately in public space.
So it's not entirely an issue of the state is taking a stand.
Kind of, sort of, yeah, but not really. I mean, in other words, the state isn't appropriating tax dollars to make this statement.
Yeah.
The state is ceding the public space to private interests.
Right.
There's who want to make this statement.
This is becoming an interesting issue.
When the state's responsibility is to, I don't know, protect its citizens. At least that's what they like to say about themselves. But carry on.
This is an interesting issue. There's a book out that I'm meaning to read called When the State Speaks. Mm-hmm. That basically talks about, you know, if the state does promote a viewpoint, what viewpoints are constitutional to promote? And obviously, you know, the First Amendment as such doesn't apply as such to the state, and it was not intended to. It's generally intended to protect people from
the state, right?
Right. So if the state decides it's going to establish a religion, that's clearly outside the bounds of what we allow the state to say,
to
make. But this is if the state is either funding or colluding or promoting this kind of iconography, that's the state speaking, and what it's saying is pretty clear.
Yeah. Well, you'd think it would be clear. You would think it would be clear. It's not clear to people who don't care to see it, though.
Right.
Or care to see other things.
Right.
Of their own imagining, of their own, that make them the heroes, or allow them at least not to be the villains.
So, so one of the things people are kicking around with this debate is, if we did tear these down,
right,
there was still a civil war.
Yeah, that happened.
A lot of people died.
Yeah.
What would a modern, viable, compassionate, you know, like even-handed, I hesitate to say politically correct, right? What would a Civil War monument or statuary
would that look like?
Look like that commemorated people, well, who weren't losers.
who deserved
to be commemorated in our current thinking about those who deserve to be commemorated.
So I should say, for the record, I'm anti-war.
Yeah.
Period. So it's hard for me to think or wrap my head around commemorating wars.
Yeah.
Except to commemorate the dead.
I have that problem too, which is why I think my favorite war monument is the Vietnam Memorial.
Without question, right. That just notes the dead.
Yeah.
And so my preference, my personal preference, if it was my decision alone, would be to commemorate the dead, all the lives lost, and to say nothing else. I mean, really, to say nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't because I'm, I don't even know whose feathers I'm ruffling by saying that. But whatever your feathers are, it's not the issue. The issue is that I think the loss of life in war is really the worst thing that happens, and we should recognize loss of life. So that's me talking.
Mm-hmm.
But what should we as a community
do? When the grace speaks.
But what should we do as a community? I think that's a different question. I think that has to be solved by communities for themselves in their context. Maybe there was some great local hero they'd like to commemorate for some reason, who did something heroic, mm-hmm. something that the community thinks is heroic. They should raise that statue, and they should festoon it appropriately and say what they have to say in this time and space.
It's interesting to me, it's been coming out that Lee himself did not advocate for memorials.
No, he wanted
statuary.
To live.
Right.
Right. No, he wanted to live, and he couldn't continue to prosecute the war post-war.
Right.
He had to be conciliatory, and you notice he wasn't hung as a traitor.
Right.
So that was his part of the bargain, was to be conciliatory and to say, you know what, we can't raise these statues. This is a war of aggression against the United States. We can't go around. We've got to bury the hatch and move on.
Mm-hmm. But then there are also the great-great-grandkids, I guess, of... Was it... I'm not sure who it was, Sherman or one of the...
It wasn't Sherman. It might have been Sherman, but I'm not sure what they would have to say about Confederate statues except burn them to the ground.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Not Lee, but... Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You're remembering a story, a news clip you read?
A news clip I read, an open letter from the descendants of one of the generals.
Generals of the Confederacy.
Right. Saying that they did not advocate these monuments and would like to see them gone.
Well, now here's the thing for me about seeing them gone, right? I know a lot of people want them torn down. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the position of maybe moving them and recontextualizing. You mentioned the Ferris State University exhibit, right?
Yeah. So that's another item here that, I mean, we're kicking around kind of an idea cloud.
Right.
But one of them is, okay, so what do you actually do with these things if your community does make the decision that they should go? Do you just melt them down? What do you do?
Do you
haul them away and just leave an empty space
on
them?
Burn them in effigy? What do you do? What could you do?
Because a lot of these are on like courthouse lawns and very public places.
Very public places. Oh, courthouse. Yeah, exactly. Don't expect the courts to protect you.
Right.
Just so you know.
Right. So, but in these prominent public spaces.
Right.
So what do you do with them? And there are various approaches. So a general approach that I like to memorializing like historically controversial things like this,
mm-hmm.
Is the approach taken by at Ferris State University. There's a museum called the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia.
Right.
And I really want us to do a field trip there someday. I keep looking at their collection online. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But in, so this is all like the Pickaninny dolls and the advertisements and the various things for
lawn jockeys. They have lawn jockeys.
I'm sure they have a room of lawn jockeys. They have lots of lawn jockeys. The whole thing. You know, everything that this guy's been able to collect over many years is contextualized. And not only are they like put in a museum to examine, and do they have you know, interpretive materials and whatnot. But he's come up with themes, you know, he's come up with essays about themes. So this was a trope, like a racist trope. And here are 100 examples
of this racist trope in use.
And that's amazing, because when you do that, when you identify the tropes,
suddenly it's,
you see them now. Right.
Right. Suddenly, like, this never went away.
It never went away. And so he's still collecting, he's extending his essays and still collecting examples in 2017.
Yeah. You know?
So, and that I think makes the whole thing worthwhile to preserve all these hateful objects. So,
well, yeah.
But these are, you know, big equestrian statues. You can't necessarily just put them indoors unless you're like the Henry Ford Museum. With a museum full of trains,
with an aircraft carrier full of
And where do they go? So I don't know that that's going to work so much, but do you change the contextual material, like change the plaques and
change the plaques? Well, for my part, this is what I think should happen to Confederate statues.
Yeah,
again, if I made the decision, this is what we would do. The people in the communities, or, you know, maybe driving through the communities, might vandalize them, take them down, destroy them, leave them, paint them, dress them, adorn them, re-plaque them, re-sign them, re-imagine them in 1,001 ways appropriate to their own community. And that would stand as the community's assertion about what we think.
There's an interesting, people are already making these decisions, right?
Right.
So I think it's just the base of the monument. I've seen recently that was tarred and feathered.
Right, just tarred and feathered.
Covered with tar and, literal tar and feathers.
Right. So maybe you tear the statue down at one point in history, and then we say, this is what happened on this date in this spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone comes back and tars the base, right?
Yeah.
Somebody comes back and chisels that. Or maybe someone comes back and restores this, and we say what happened at what time, ideally by whom, and what their motivation was. So we can actually have active participatory history in the public square. That would be, I think, amazing.
So this is,
and really get to the heart of communities,
conflict,
and remembering the community.
So this is something that, this approach is mentioned and advocated in a way in, is it Jim Lowen?
I think it's Lowen, Lies Across America.
Yeah, the book Lies Across America.
Sure.
And for example, there's a in the Southwest, there's a statue to a very evil man who had the feet cut off of Native Americans in large numbers, an act of terror, you know, towards
terror and control.
And someone cut the foot off the statue. And Lowen advocates for leaving it that way, but explaining
why
the foot's gone.
Exactly.
Why that is. And that's a pretty clear cut example, but in these cases where like they were just knocked down and are left like flopped over, I'm all in favor of something like that, except my fear is that
safety issue.
Well, no, that if a statue is like damaged like that, after a year or two it's gonna disintegrate,
it's gonna run away.
You know, and then there's nothing to show, and that I think
there's that.
I'd like to see something remaining to show.
Right. Well, and let me be very clear about why. Because we've got to understand this in a larger context. All of this in a larger context than just the Confederacy. And just because their whole point was propaganda. They are propaganda. They're taking down as propaganda.
Yeah.
It's part of a propaganda campaign.
In general, because they're like mass-produced, or they're not artistically valuable.
No, they have, unless you put that, put that to rest, right? They have no artistic value or merit in large part.
And some of them that you've seen pictures of recently that are on private land are actually hilariously awful.
Yes. So, you know, they were the best that whoever could do at the time.
Yeah.
But the this larger context of taking them down allows us to perpetuate this myth about ourselves. See how great we are. You took the statues down because, you know, those people were bad.
You mean if they just disappear overnight one talks about them, then everyone can say, oh, yeah, up until...
Yeah, we're not like that.
But what does that really mean? It's like, well, up until 2017, we had deeply racist beliefs in the community.
But we took them out. I mean, and that's ludicrous. But we get to believe that about ourselves when the statues are gone. When they disappear, the statues are gone. We have no public memory, no public conversation about that.
So that does bring us to, had you heard that in all these communities where these things are being taken down, including in the dead of night, that this was a hotly debated issue it was...
It's just suddenly here.
Now, I know that there was, the Confederate flag has had legal challenges,
right?
And there was this brilliant moment where that young woman
Bree Newsom scaled. Do you know how hard it is to scale a flagpole? I just want to bring that up, all right? But carry on.
And actually tore it down.
Tore it down herself.
You know, tore it down herself, which was, you know,
just marvelous.
She needs a statue.
She needs a statue, right? Right. And honestly, it's, for me... It's these illegal takedowns that really are the heart of what's right.
Those are the things we should be commemorating
in
what's left of the statuary. I wanted to mention an article, again, I read by a woman who was traveling, a POC, a person of color, who was traveling outside the U.S. in the Caribbean region and had not been to these countries and saw in these countries... statuary that just blew her mind, which was a repeated theme where it was celebrating the end of the slave trade.
Yes.
And you had statues of black folks holding up manacles with the chains
broken. And they weren't just like, these aren't just these statues. I've seen pictures of them. They're not just like a human-sized statue of a black folk.
No,
they're
heroic.
Absolutely heroic outsize statues of survival and triumph. They're amazing.
And so if we're going to, if we need some new statuary to replace the statues from some of these communities that celebrate what's worth celebrating about the Civil War...
If there's anything to celebrate.
Would they? I mean, it seems like... But it seems like the communities, they still, in 2017, I think it's largely impossible for them to even imagine putting up statues of black folk to replace Robert E. Lee. You know?
A man like Robert E. Lee.
So that's also a little WTF for me. Like,
But, you know, that's, you know... That's where we are. This is why I don't think we can have those statues. I think those statues would be a lie here.
That it wouldn't make sense
be a public lie.
To, like, if some group funded these, that, you know, like, you're commemorating liberation, and it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And it's this sort of Orwellian... this has always been a free society. What do you mean?
And if we're not going to talk reparations, we're not serious.
You're not serious. We're not having a conversation.
Yeah.
If you're here well, and this is the other thing. People are like, well, the only people saying this are radicals and Trump supporters. Well, you know, if you're going to take down Lee, it's time to take down Washington and Jefferson too.
Yeah, that slippery slope argument...
And yeah, the Trump supporters have this as a slippery slope argument.
If this was Britain, if we had lost the war of independence, it would make sense to take down the statues of the traitors.
Yeah,
really
would.
But and yes, Washington and Jefferson owned slaves, and that should be taught in its fullness.
Right.
But the people who won the war and created the country. You know, created the United States,
mm-hmm.
At least the intellectual framework of our laws and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one day we will get to the point where we're going to knock down their statues too. But to me, a
today is not that
a
day.
Figure like Washington and a figure like Jefferson, their lives and their writings, and even Hamilton, are so interesting that, you know, that you may disagree with any particular and many particulars, and of course disagree with their slave ownership.
Sure. Well, they're like Goethe.
Yeah.
Right? So Goethe was a unbelievable racist. Like,
sure.
Like, yes. Like more, like still more the, racist the than
the founding anyone. Figure of German literature. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just but he's still the founding figure of German literature, and yeah. And people still read his writing. And this, to be clear, when I say we can't honor Goethe or we can't honor Jefferson, we can't honor Washington. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't mean we should burn all their letters.
I don't mean we shouldn't. You don't mean we shouldn't study them.
I don't mean we shouldn't study them. I mean we need to recontextualize them in our study.
And we shouldn't honor them as unalloyed heroes.
Right. So
now you can't, yeah. even the recent biography, even Chernow's biography of Washington,
still
you
lionize
him. You can, well, they do to an extent.
Right.
And it's kind of fascinating to read the way they do, because one of my favorite passages is Washington was writing a letter about the return of slaves who were, you know, like I'm blanking. Anyway.
Oh, the slaves were they were returned to him?
No, it wasn't him. It was a friend of his writing to him about how he was afraid to travel to Pennsylvania because he was afraid his slaves would be stolen. Like
be stolen there.
Yeah.
Right.
And then not returned.
Not returned to him.
And Washington was going on and on about how, oh, yeah, that's so awful that you can't travel freely with your slaves. Right? First of all, that itself is such a ridiculous. But Chernow comments, Washington then apparently remembered that he was opposed to slavery. And then he, on a dime, he turns in this letter and starts talking about how tragic and horrible it is that people have slaves.
People own slaves, right.
And so, I mean,
like in the context of the same letter,
in the context of starting a new sentence, and it's Chernow doesn't bury that. He points that out, you know, right? And that's, to me, that's why that biography is so fascinating.
Right.
So anyway, but these are complex figures, but they are, for better or worse, still the founders.
Right.
And well, I mean, whereas like Lee and whatnot is the founder of what now exactly?
He was the military leader of the Confederacy, and which is a real part of American history that happened.
It is a real part of American history.
But
and people making the argument that we can't tear down these statues because then we'll forget the history. Like there's a meme circulating. Have you heard of books?
Books. Well, no, and I yes and no. We can't tear down these statues because, which I feel is a disingenuous argument for not tearing them down.
Yeah.
I think the argument for not tearing them down is we will forget that we're a society that put them up to terrorize black people.
That we'll forget that we did put them up and why.
And why. Yeah. Much like one of the other memes is...
Well, we already forgot why.
Right. We already forgot why.
That was the lost cause.
Right. And because no one's ever pointed to it and said what it is and why it was there. It was just there as background propaganda to shape our understanding.
If you were white, you didn't think about it.
No, it didn't occur to you.
Yeah.
And so this is my other piece on this. Did I even finish this? I don't think I finished this
I'm
thought.
I'm sorry. We've been kind of jumbled up in our presentation today. But
you know, I think free form is good and okay. We don't need to apologize for it.
All right. Well, this is the time we have.
Right. So, so. You know, no apologies. The bringing the statues down gets to be a white liberal success.
Yes.
So unless black activists do this for the black community and for themselves, this is a white liberal success where we get to point at congratulate themselves on being a post-racial society. Hey, look, we passed whatever law. Hey, look, we did this.
We haven't fixed redlining. We haven't fixed, you know.
And have no intention to.
Right.
We have, I mean, and literally, unless we're talking about reparations, we're not talking. Liberals are patting themselves on the back.
Right.
for wearing a safety pin or whatever it is they're doing this week.
All right. So you're not even completely in favor of the white community deciding, okay, it's time, and then of course spiriting these away in the dead of night.
Like in Baltimore, yeah.
They get to pretend they weren't there.
Pretend they weren't ever there.
Yeah.
Or worse yet, much like affirmative action, you want something else? We took the statues down.
So I want to make a quick comment. People had claimed that this march in Charlottesville was inspired by...
Oh, please. Yeah.
The fact that the debate over the monuments.
No.
But if you look at their flyers, their propaganda, their websites and whatnot, it's not mentioned. And there were no groups that marched in Charlottesville that were... historic preservationists, right? The historic preservationists didn't come marching shoulder to shoulder with
the Klan and the neo-Nazis.
The Klan and the Stormfront and all these groups. People have done a pretty detailed breakdown, in fact, of which groups were there and what they believe. None of them were like really into, I just really love public art.
Yeah, it's critical importance.
So I want to, one last thing is, we started to talk about this, but the timing of this and how this is all coming about suddenly.
It's just here.
And literally in Baltimore was overnight, and I hadn't heard anything about the lead up to that. That's interesting, and we really should be asking ourselves...
Why?
And
what's that about?
You don't want to go too far down conspiracy theory rabbit holes.
I love those rabbit holes so much, but yeah.
And this is sort of happening just as Bannon is leaving, leaving the White House and going back to Breitbart. And who's inciting what and who's promoting what, who's pushing what, and who's manipulating which groups for
what reason?
For what reason? For the benefit of the Trump presidency. This is basically, as I see it, it's a campaign for the midterms and for 2020.
Yeah, this is campaigning.
Campaign activity to get the white supremacist groups to march and incite riots and hopefully, stay in the news cycle.
Right. And incidentally, though, to all the people who want to lecture me about how to vote, I'd like to note for the record that none of you supported taking down monuments until now. Or even talked about it.
I have talked about it.
So just, keep that in mind.
Yeah.
When you get ready to lecture me.
Do you think, well...
go on, say it.
How would Clinton have handled this?
That's a good question. I don't know.
No, it's not. It's a shit post in the middle of our podcast here. It's literally just an angry meme.
Just like a big dump.
Yeah. Anyway. Now, I'm starting to feel a little tired of still seeing butthurt emails.
Buh.
Yeah.
Buh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those of us who weren't willing to vote for Clinton.
Yeah, no,
I'm
not going to vote for your asshole.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm not going to vote for your asshole. Stop asking me.
Are still being harangued and harassed about how, and it's like he said in our first discussion here, this is, or our last, our previous one, that, it's not that this is all happening because Trump is in office.
Right. Well, and if this isn't happening because he's in office, he's in office because this is happening. If
the cause and effect were like that, and Trump voters weren't racists,
right?
You would not see 63, whatever the polling percentages are, still approving of the way he handled this.
Right. Right.
And still believing that there were, good people on both sides, and it was unfortunate that the alt-left inspired this violence.
Mm. Arr.
Sorry, I kind of spoke over you.
In terms of me voting for my self-interest.
Right.
As far as I can tell, there's literally no other way that white liberals will function as anti-racists.
Unless they're not provoked.
Unless they're provoked.
By direct action.
Right. So absent that provocation. So in other words, if Clinton is in office.
Right. They have cover for racist. And racist again, we're using racism in the sense, not in the bigotry sense, in the organized
institutional racism suppression sense. And oppression of non-white people.
Yeah.
Then you're all over it. America's all over the oppression, as long as they have, as long as they have cover from their appropriate liberal figurehead, who says the right things and doesn't express public bigotry.
Yeah, but no, if you actually are in solidarity with people of color, you cannot ignore Hillary Clinton's history in creating the carceral state, creating the her super predators comments, her support for
that can't go under the rug.
Yeah,
and really, if I want to inspire your allyship, there's no better way than to have someone you despise in office.
Mm-hmm. And even you can't even support things like her warmongering disproportionately against people of color. Countries of color.
I mean, it's just nauseous. I mean, if that doesn't embarrass and nauseate you, I don't know what we have to talk
about.
We're not allies.
Yeah. So, all right. But it is interesting. So Bannon's now outside the tent, pissing in or pissing on the tent. It's not clear
what's going on.
Yeah,
there. I don't even know. I'm not following the whole presidential TV show.
So. Yeah, well, we thought that it was a remake of The Apprentice, but it's actually a remake of Survivor. Yeah. But he's now back at Breitbart, and I'm actually much more worried to have him outside the Oval Office. I believed inside the Oval Office.
He was contained.
He was contained and relatively ineffective because he still had Trump is such a weak leader that he'll basically say or do what his family tells him to do.
Right.
And you can see this in the way that he keeps changing what he's saying in his press conference. He says something outrageous. He then goes.
He goes home and like, what the hell's wrong with you?
He goes home. He tweets something, and then he goes on TV looking hangdog and says something placatory. He says something,
Well, yeah. Actually.
But then he's like to give another press conference or another event about something different, and then it all bursts out. Like his id bursts out, and his family and whatnot are standing around going, "Oh Jesus!"
Again,
we told him about this,
right? Yeah.
But as a result, Bannon's not getting anything done to speak of. But now back at Breitbart, he can get a lot done. And in fact, he can get a lot of people killed.
He can get a lot of people killed. And really now he's got lots of material.
Lots of
cred and lots of material from this whole sort of staged thing with the monuments.
Right.
Like, suddenly this is a thing? Suddenly white America cares about the monuments?
Yeah.
Well, this is the funniest part to me. Hey, we're not going to host websites for white supremacists. You just noticed?
Yes. You just now noticed that you've been... Stormfront's been paying you every month to host their site? Yeah.
You just figured that out. Wow. And you didn't realize what a white supremacist was until, like, now.
Yeah. These things are all tied together, and we have a lot of related topics, including free speech and Antifa and whatnot, that I was hoping to get into. But really, today, because of our time constraints, we're going to have to limit it to just a discussion of the monuments. But
so we'll cut it there.
I think we're gonna cut it out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Take care, all.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.